It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. Hi, this is Foster Brown, co-host of the program, and we've got a great team in studio with me today. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Rick Broida, the gadget guy, is in house. Great show ahead of us. We'll be talking about some very good deals and gadgets that are out there. And Mike Wendland, our old friend PC Mike, will be back. He's got a whole new role he's playing as a roving RV reporter. All that coming up on the Internet Advisor, including an hour of answering your questions. Thank you so much for allowing us to join you on your journey through life. Whether you're joining us, listening to us live on our flagship station or across the Michigan Talk Network, thank you for letting us come in. And as a bonus, we've got a great crew here in studio for us today. Of course, the usual group of suspects is here. Gary Baker, my co-host for the last 16 years. Gary, good to have you always.
It's always good to be here.
And Mr. Eddie Rudell. Hi, Eddie.
Hello, Foster.
Busy week. We're going to be talking about some of the tech adventures you've had, putting people's breathing life into people's laptops.
Yeah. I look forward to that, reliving that experience.
Oh, Lord. And Rick Broida, the gadget guy, is here. Rick, it's so good to have you in studio.
Great to be here. I love some tech adventures myself.
Well, today, guys, we had actually a pretty busy week this past week in terms of things been going on. And by the way, folks, if you go to InternetAdvisor.net, we changed around our homepage a little bit, so we show some more of the news stories that we've been looking at this week. And among them, there's an article Rick wrote on replacing productivity apps in iOS. But one I wanted to start off with was just one about working at home. Big story this week. Not only did Yahoo talk about, Marissa Mayer, about shutting down, or at least, I don't know if it's completely shutting down working from home.
Well, she backed off of that.
Oh, did she?
I think, didn't she? Finally?
Well, what's happening is that Best Buy apparently didn't get the memo.
And they tried it. They're trying
they're doing it now, apparently. They're calling their troops in as well.
Well, there's something to be said for, you know, I could see both sides. Something to be said
That's
for,
what I was interested
for
in.
Proximity. Yeah. And actually, I would call it propinquity, which is the love of proximity, right?
Wait, let
the
me
love
get my dictionary
get,
app.
That is a Funk and Wagnalls attack there.
So proximity means you're close together.
Right.
Propinquity means you like being close together.
I've never experienced that.
Well, yeah, propinquous.
Well, you have,
person.
But maybe not with your coworkers. Who knows? Anyway, won't go there.
Having it right now.
But you know, because there are things that just happen around the water cooler. There's things that are just happen when you have the opportunity to collaborate face to face. We simulate that in a lot of different ways. Different teams that I've been on or managed, you know, we'll put up a screen at the end of the table and put somebody that's remote right on the screen and they're there and we could talk to them. And that does a pretty good
job.
That
does help, yes.
There's also something to be said on the other side of that argument, which is let's be flexible. Kids today, especially the new millennium workers, want that flexibility and they won't even come to a company that won't allow them to work the way they want to. And some kids, you know, and not just kids, but some people, and especially in our industry, in the IT industry, you know, they may get up later, come in later, and they may only work till 3 or 4 in the morning, right? Right. And that's okay, too.
I'm just curious, how many of you have worked from home?
I work from home 100% of the time.
100% of the time, okay. Eddie, you've been pretty much in the...
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the office, but there are times where I've taken a day off here and there and worked from home.
And you're on call.
Plus, I'm on call all the time. But there's something to be said. The lady that I carpool with every day from Ortonville down to Detroit, there's something to be said about working home. She really enjoys, looks forward to that Monday and Friday when she was able to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, her job responsibilities have changed. Technology's changed a little bit. They're not going to allow her to do that anymore. And she is royally PO'd. I mean, because she figures that they're taking money right out of her pocket because of all the, now the additional gases, expenses, and auto expenses, and wear and tear.
For those of you who aren't aware, that's about it's a little more than about 45-minute drive, isn't it? To an hour.
We're doing 90 miles an hour. It's 45 minutes. But if you're doing the property, if you're doing the speed limit, it takes about an hour.
A little more than an hour. So think of that, folks. That's a trade-off.
That's one way.
Have you worked from home, Gary?
I have, absolutely. Yeah, okay. But you can't manage from home, right? Unless you have a completely dispersed team. Yeah. Managers have to be in the office. Now, if you want to be an individual performer, you know, maybe you can work from home, maybe you can. And maybe if you're working in the office primarily and need to work from home for a life event or a, you know, even the sewer plugging up, you have to meet the plumber, right? You should be able to, right?
Well, my son-in-law works with an IT company that has, really is global. Mm-hmm. So he's working with engineers in India and technicians in Australia, and I think some of his colleagues are in Italy. So, first of all, getting a time where you can all meet, you know, even if it's virtually, you know, through the cloud, that's tough. But getting a time, somebody's going to have to get up in the middle of the night.
That's right.
Or in the middle of the morning.
And you're not going to stay in the office to do that.
No. And there should be some balances. Yeah, you're drawing from that. So what would be what's the advantage of calling all these people back, Rick? I mean, you work from home.
I do, and you know, I think it really has to vary from company to company, and even on a employee by employee basis, because everybody has different needs, and different companies have different needs. You know, I love working from home. So for any company that would require me to be on site, you know, all day every day, that would be a non-starter for me. But it's
because of the kind of work as a writer that you do.
Well, and again, that type of work, again, you can do from anywhere.
Right. And you shouldn't have to go to the office just to work by yourself. Doesn't make sense.
I've worked from home for over 20 years now, but I also worked in the corporate environment when I worked for Diamond Chrysler Studio. So I experienced both of those things. I prefer working from home.
Yeah.
But people, folks, if you haven't done it, don't fool yourself into thinking that it is, you know, all day in your jammies.
Yeah.
There's a tremendous number of distractions. There are some downsides.
You have to have discipline to do that.
And you have to be able to separate yourself, I think, from the household.
Yeah. You know, and there was this, when I worked for Hewlett-Packard, there was this culture where a lot of the jobs were people, go ahead, work at home. But then what happened, the company took it one step further and said, well, if you could work for home, then you could work overseas and we've eliminated your job.
Ooh.
So then what they do is they send you, once the job role's been streamlined to work at home, it can be streamlined to be worked overseas.
Worked anywhere.
Anywhere. Right? So, but we're seeing some of that come back now. Like Gary said, it comes and goes one way.
Well, in two big places, Yahoo and Best Buy, at least, they're calling them back in. The sheep are being called back in the fall. By the way, for our engineer, Rich, we want to have you right where you are, behind the glass. Don't go home, please. We'll be back in just a second to talk with an old friend, Mike Wendland, about a new role that he's assuming. You know, guys, I think I am running out of the count of hats that our guest right now has worn. I'm talking about Mike Wendland, an old friend of ours who has been a tech writer and commentator for many, many years. He was on TV here in Detroit and also nationally does some tech work. And Mike is back with us now because he's got a new hat that he's got on, probably on top of the other ones for warmth, I understand. Mike Wendland, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hey, guys. How are you, man?
Hey, Mike.
You're not still camping out in the cold, are you?
Actually, I'm in Dublin.
Dublin?
As in Ireland?
No, as in Georgia.
Can you
imagine a redneck St. Patrick's Day celebration? That's where I am.
Oh, my goodness. I love it.
South Central Georgia, it's about 70 degrees, though, down here.
So. Oh, that's a good reason to be here.
Just a moment. Let me imagine that. Okay, I feel much better now. Thank you.
Hey, Mike, I think you got to change your handle. You know, PC Mike, maybe Mobile Mike or something.
Well, you know, everything is kind of revolves around the same thing. It's technology and telling stories with it. And I am having a ball these days doing the stories that you never could quite do in mainstream media, you know, where everything is a minute and 10 seconds. And it's got to be sensational.
Oh, you're right.
It leads and all that stuff that the public knows is wrong, but they keep throwing that junk at us, and now I'm having fun just telling fun stories.
I bet you, because you as a reporter are an inveterate storyteller. I know from having sat under you as a teacher as well, you're marvelous at the stories that you bring into that. So you already just get, you're in hog heaven there.
Yeah, and the best part is I get to use technology. I've got my little Verizon 4G MiFi card that keeps me connected. You know, I've used this now in this new gig in the RV that I'm doing all across the country. I've never lost, maybe in Yellowstone National Park for a couple hours, but that's about it.
Wow.
And even down here in Dublin, Georgia, which is a tiny little town about 45 miles, 50 miles southeast of Atlanta, it's booming through, and I'm having a great time. But this is, you know, what I'm kind of doing is doing this, you know, as a journalist, every place I went, you'd go in really quick, you'd tell a story, and then you're out on to another one. And I always used to say, boy, it'd be nice just to spend a little time and see the sights, meet some of the people, and learn the stories of these places. And now that I'm kind of on my own, that's what I'm doing with an RV and my technology and having a great time. Road trucking.
You've always figured out how to have a great time, I think. I remember.
If you're not having fun, it's work, right?
Absolutely. And you've never had to work, right? Yeah.
I remember. I've never felt anything is work. No?
I remember when you were on Channel 4 and I was doing a once a week internet advisor gig on Channel 7. And there was a person talked to me and said, you know what, there's really a difference. First of all, you have a face for radio, talking to me. And second of all, you know, she found that she really thought you were a lot more interesting. And I said, come on, Mom, really?
Oh, no. Oh, come on.
That's cold.
But it was fun to always listen to you and watch you. And now you've got this very cool gig.
Well, you know, Mike, you had PCMike.com as a handle. That's still out there, right? You still do?
Oh, yeah.
You
still do a weekly national television report on technology. And I've been doing that since 1994.
Wow.
And it's kind of evolved, you know. When we first started, it was Netscape. Does anybody remember Netscape?
Man, yeah.
You know, and now it's apps and mobile connectivity.
Well, I want to talk about some of the biggest changes in that, but just to let people know, if you go to our site, internetadvisor.net, we have a link there to Mike's brand new venture, which is roadtrekking.com. Journalists takes up the RV lifestyle. Now, did I see your wife travels with you in this?
Yep, my wife and usually my dog, my 70-pound Norwegian Elkhound. He's with us today.
Wow.
And you know, he's got that double coat that those husky breeds have, and he's not liking the 70-degree weather. We were up in the snow-covered UP about a month ago doing some stories, and there was 28 inches of snow on the ground. He loved that.
Yeah. I bet he did.
Yeah, but he doesn't like springtime down
I'll
here.
Sleep out. He slept outside with those two tent campers, didn't he?
Yeah, we thought we were so rugged. We're at Prominent Falls about a month ago, and it's 4 degrees below zero, and I'm feeling like, man, I am a rugged camper. And I look out the window, and there's two guys in tents.
And your dog probably said, that's it, man. Get out there.
Yeah, he was in husky heaven.
By the way, you can see the video that Mike shot of that on his roadtrekking.com site. And so I watched it. It was a wonderful thing to watch. Mike, let me just go back to technology for just a moment and look back over those years since when you started in 1994 to right now in 2013. What are some of the key changes for you that have taken place in that time?
Well, I remember in 94 and that's when I started really doing the national stuff, because the internet had just become widely available because of Netscape and an easy web browser. And I remember thinking, this is the sea changer. And nobody believed me. I taught at a place in Florida, the Poynter Institute for Journalism. I used to tell everybody, your jobs will either be eliminated or so drastically changed by this technology that you won't recognize it in 15, 20 years.
And ouch.
They all just laughed, you know. But, you know, it's just stunning to look back at really in about, you know, 15, almost 20 years, how the internet has changed everything. Today, of course, it's mobile technology.
Right.
And it's this 4G Verizon network I'm on now, and the speed of which you can communicate
amazing
from your pocket. That, to me, is the biggest change. And, of course, tablets and smartphones are more powerful than the computers we had even 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So imagine now what it will be like in another
yep.
10 years.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's so exciting to me, as we see technology change so fast.
I got to tell you, I don't know if you're a fan of the Doctor Who.
Yeah, I
have fallen in love with that series again on Netflix, and I am having a ball. But the last series I just saw was about the future of technology, where they embed chips, you know, into your head.
Yeah, and they're actually trying that now, experimenting with it. And then look at these Google glasses that everybody's kind of making fun at. But trust me, that's the first step in it, and that is what we're going to see. Much more of that stuff.
Have you got your order in for the iWatch?
Oh, of course, you know, I'll be standing in line like all of them. I can't resist this stuff.
So the nice thing, Mike can go from place to place to wait in line. That's the new thing, right, Mike?
Yeah. Well, this whole thing with the RV has been so fun, because we got that's small enough that I can park it anywhere.
Right.
And yet it's big enough that I have a king-size bed, a full refrigerator, a bathroom, a galley. You know, it's everything we need. It's solar powered. It's very green, eco-friendly, and it fits right in down here in Green, Dublin, Georgia, because it's a green machine.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Mike Wendland, by the way, is our guest here right now. We're catching up with him down in Dublin, Georgia, where he's waiting for y'all to come down there and celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
redneck Irishman down here. The whole town. The whole town is built on a month-long St. Patrick's celebration.
No kidding. I mean, and was like an Irish settlement that came in there, and that's why
it was years and years ago. And it's actually a pretty neat little town. There's a lot of industry down here.
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen any green beer, but they had today, for example, an Irish dog contest where everybody dressed their dog up as leprechauns.
Oh, my Lord.
I kid you not. Then they did a baby contest where they're going to do that with babies, and every motel is, you know, the Leprechaun Motel or the Shamrock Inn, and it's really funny.
Well, Mike,
so we stopped at McDonald's and had a Shamrock Shake, and they have them all year round down here.
You're definitely having fun on the road. Last question for you: which operating system are you using now? Have you tried Windows 8? Are you a Mac
user? I've tried Windows 8, and I have to have it because, you know, I still do some stuff very little that has to, you know, that's platform dependent.
Mm-hmm.
I use all Mac. First of all, I just think it's such a better platform to edit, and I do all my video editing on the road, right in the back. So I'm a Mac guy for all of that. But, you know, I think that's the next trend. And in another 5 years, we'll look back at Windows and OS operating systems and say, this is silly. Remember when they did that? It will all go NetWise, and it'll be platform-free. As I think we're really seeing now, and Google seems again to be leading the way with that.
Very interesting.
We'll see other people in it.
Well, folks,
everything's on the cloud, man.
We have the soundbite now, folks, and we will now look forward. Listen, this is the man who was the prophet in 1994. Mike Wendland, have a ball down there. Say hello to your wife for us, and have a great time RVing.
Yeah, see you guys online all the time. Bye-bye.
All right, well, check out and see if there are any other card-carrying science fiction freaks in the studio here. Anybody? Okay, Rick, all right. So when I mentioned Doctor Who, you knew who I was talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
This is like the third or fourth incarnation, I think, isn't it?
Seventh.
Probably the seventh, you're right. He's been out for a long time.
I have been trying to get into Doctor Who. It hasn't really hooked me. I'm more of a Trekkie, you know.
Well, I didn't think, folks, Doctor Who is a science fiction series that came out of Great Britain, oh boy, many, many years ago. I remember, I think in the late 80s, early 90s, my sister talking about how hooked they were on that, she and her husband at the time. And then I just, through Netflix, got back to it again. I love the stories. The stories are really well told. And I thought, oh, this is going to be really hokey, you know, like weird aliens. But it's always got an underlying, like most science fiction, it says something pretty
serious.
Where
did you start? Did you start at the very beginning?
Whatever the series is, they started with on Netflix, with a newer host.
Newer.
2005, 2006
maybe?
Yeah, 5 or 6, I think, when that series started.
I'll go back to it. Your recommendation, Foster, I'll give it another
there
try.
There you go. I have been really impressed with it. I thought, oh, man.
Yeah, you know, and I started watching it again with David Tennant, who is the one that you're referring to. He was actually in some of the Harry Potter movies. And that's how my kids got involved. They're like, I loved him as Barty Crouch, you know, and stuff like that. And then they go, oh, he's playing Doctor Who? And my kids, I just can't. Now they're starting to go backwards and watch the old ones from the 80s and the 70s.
Yeah. They're really an ingenious thing. Now, we're here for the gadget guys. So
I'm sorry.
I made that little detour, but I saw Rick's eyes light up when I mentioned Doctor Who. Rick Bright, of course, is in studio. Rick is the gadget guy for us, but Rick, you also have many hats you wear. Lots of columns you write for, The Cheapskate. on CNET, and then I see a whole bunch of other places as well.
Yeah, I get around.
I get around talking about technology, and also always, I love it, Rick, some great insights into the deals that are going on out there. One you've got right now, since I'm involved in cord cutting right now, and I noticed you have a story about a new Roku box that's coming out.
Yes, well, of course, the Roku box is the little box that connects to your TV to bring you streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and even music services like
lots
Pandora, Spotify, things like that. And just kind of out of the blue last week, Roku's had the same three or four models available for the last year and a half, and just out of the blue last week came the Roku 3. And it's not certainly revolutionary, but it does bring a couple of nice evolutionary new features to the table. The physical design is a little different. It's a little bit more rounded, but more importantly, it has a faster processor. I do find the Roku interface to be a little sluggish at times. But the really big deal about this one is the remote. So the new remote on the Roku is not only I don't know if it uses Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. I've actually read conflicting reports that, but it doesn't require a line of sight. In other words, you can point it anywhere and it'll still work.
Another remote?
I was going to say, my wife is going to hear this. Oh, no, not another one.
But that means you could program it probably in a universal. There you go.
You definitely could, or you could use the Roku app, which is available for your smartphone or your tablet or whatever, which is a nice little perk. But one of the really cool features, I think, especially if you have a Roku in your bedroom, you like to watch TV at night, is it has a headphone jack right on the remote. So you can plug your headphones
on the remote
and listen wirelessly, not disturbing your spouse while you're watching TV, which is, I'm sure, going to save a lot of marriages.
See, I could watch Doctor Who while my wife watched the Red Wings. Because I'm sorry, folks, I'm not a big hockey fan.
I was going to say, that kind of sounds a lot, Foster.
It does.
You're not watching sports at all?
Grandma is... No, sports... I love soccer, but that's another subject for another time. My beloved wife loves... And the Red Wings are getting thumped today by the Blue Jackets. In any case, so that's a great thing. So privacy, so you can sit there with the remote, have it close to you, and with the headset, then just not disturb anybody else while you're watching.
You know, and that's kind of important for older people. Like my father's going through
a point
now where he's like, he goes to the store and he gets really confused because he's trying to find these headsets because he has to have the TV blaring and everyone else in the house can't even carry on a conversation.
That's a very good point you're bringing up, Ed. For older folks, that's an excellent point. That way you don't have, everybody else doesn't have to suffer with that.
Yeah. Good point. So the new Roku 3, I believe, goes on sale next month. I think April. And
what's it run?
It's going to run $99.99. So it's the new high-end Roku box, which, is still, even at $100 is a great deal. They still have like their entry-level Roku LT at $50, which is another great deal. But, to me, that's a no-brainer. You know, that's such a great product.
If you're going to go cutting the cord. By that, folks, by the way, I mean... you will still get cable input to your house. You'll get the high-speed line coming in.
For internet.
But you take that internet line and put it directly into something like the Roku box. Now, you can use that in conjunction with your cable, or you could use it, some people are using it instead.
Right.
And are hooking up and watching the digital local channels, and then are using the Roku box.
Now, the Roku, does that also provide a rudimentary, like, web browser, at least? Was that the device that provided that?
No, not really. No? And, in fact, one of the key things that Roku is still missing is a YouTube channel, which is kind of crazy, something that Apple TV offers and some of the others do.
Yeah.
And there's actually a workaround that I just wrote about on PC World earlier this week, where you can get kind of like a third-party, back channel for YouTube if you really want it, but it's not perfect.
One thing I got to say, and I'm noticing when I, by the way, folks, you can link off to that Roku site through Internet Advisor, our homepage, is they've changed the way the screen lines up.
Yes,
so you've got your controls, a new interface. I think this is much easier to work with.
Definitely.
A lot like with my Apple TV, which I love, you get that incredible snowstorm, a blizzard of icons that you got to make, and you're always constantly working through that. This is a much more, I really hope Apple does an upgrade pretty quick on that.
Right, and good news on that front is that users of the Roku 2 line will get that updated interface as well, free of charge. They're going to push that out, I think, in May or June.
So it comes right through your software. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about some other things you've got down here. The Sonos Play Bar. I've seen this advertised on TV.
Yes, so Sonos, for those who are not familiar with it, they make some kind of higher-end wireless audio gear.
Mm-hmm.
So envision, if you will, just kind of like a standalone speaker that you would have in your living room or your kitchen or whatever, and it's connected wirelessly to your router, and you can stream audio from it from just about any source you can imagine, whether it's your own iTunes library or from Pandora or Spotify or just about you name it. and they're hugely popular. As the cheapskate, it's very difficult for me to even talk about Sonos because they're pricey. They're very expensive. I mean, not only do you need to buy the speaker, you need to buy this bridge so that you can connect it wirelessly to your router. The stuff is expensive. That being said, I got a chance to review the new Sonos Play Bar over the last couple of weeks. And the Play Bar is a speaker bar. It's designed to sit in front of your TV and kind of not only greatly improve the sound that comes from your TV speakers, which if you have experience with, you know it tends to be pretty poor. Instead of having to buy a receiver and a whole bunch of surround sound speakers and this whole big, you know, fancy, expensive setup, you can get this one single single speaker. And that's what the Sonos Play Bar is.
And so it's got the bridge and everything else inside of it?
Well, no, it doesn't have the bridge inside of it, but it's designed to work with your TV. Whereas
that's
all
right.
the other ones are just kind of standalone. And it is a nice product. It is very nice. The sound quality is great.
It looked like about, what, 3 feet long?
Maybe not quite that long. Okay. It's about yay big.
Folks, look closely at your radio for that.
Between 28 and 32 inches.
Somewhere around.
Thank you. Wow. Good. So, but it's just, it looks nice. It works just like other Sonos equipment in that you can also stream all sorts of audio to it when you're not watching TV. And unfortunately, the price tag on this thing is $699. So it's for, soundbars go, it's very expensive because you can get another, you know, similar products for around $200, $300.
But for the audiophile,
it's a great product.
It's a beautiful thing, and it because it is so slim and unobtrusive, it just sits tucked right underneath your screen.
Or mounts on the wall.
Or could mount on the wall as well, and has a beautiful, beautiful sound. Now, Rick, I know you have a number of things that have to do with Apple products, and in particular, some rumors that are up and about some things that they're having coming out this year, and I'm dying to hear what your take on that is.
Right. Well, so this is the time of year when we typically hear new iPad rumors. We're getting into March, April, and that's generally the time when Apple reveals new iPad models. So I just real quickly want to say that, you know, we've been hearing all the usual talk about like an iPad mini 2. You know, the iPad mini has been a very big seller.
With a retina screen, I think, this time, right?
Hopefully it would come with a retina screen this time.
And probably the upgraded CPU as well, the faster processor.
Probably faster, you know, so they'll make their little incremental improvements to it in that respect. As far as a new full-size iPad, an iPad 5, if you will, rumors have been a little more scarce about that, but I kind of have to wonder what is left for Apple to do.
Yeah, and the tablet world... How much difference do you make a rectangle look?
They're still way up high. They're still top of the charts as far as tablet sales go. So it'll be interesting to see if they can come up with anything. But where I'm really interested right now is this rumor about an iWatch. That is connected to your Apple device.
Can we say calling Dick Tracy?
Yes, exactly. Whether or not it would have actually phone functions or, you know, the big thing at CES this past year was the debut of the Pebble, which was a Kickstarter project. It's a smart watch.
Yes, exactly. A little watch. A beautiful little thing.
It is a beautiful little thing. But you know what? To me, it almost seems like kind of a throwback.
Did you get to wear one?
They're just starting to ship right now. I got to see one up close and personal. But, you know, to me, it's kind of a throwback device in that it's very, you know, it doesn't have a touch screen. You have to use buttons to kind of scroll through the display and so forth. So I'm not that excited about it, but I'm very interested to see what Apple might do.
Now, I want to talk some more about that because this really is interesting to talk about the iWatch. We're talking Apple rumors right now. And this is the season to talk about the Orchard. We'll be back in just a moment, however, with Mike Brennan with the My Tech News feature, which is one of our features now weekly here on the Internet Advisor. And now it's time for a very special feature that we have each week at this time, which is our Michigan Tech News with Mike Brennan. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Foster. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, Mike. Welcome. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Yes, we're glad to have you back. And please, again, this is our sincere, our sympathies to you for the loss of your father. And I know that was a big hole in your life when that happened.
That was a hard one, but, you know, every day gets a little better, so.
Glad to hear that, Mike. All right, so what are the top news stories in technology in Michigan this week?
Well, ePrize. I remember when little Josh Linkner started ePrize, about 10 years ago, I guess?
Yeah, a little bit longer than that, but you're right. Great concept. What a smart guy.
Anyway, he's out of there now, and now he's a big-time venture capitalist downtown, but the company goes on. They just made their fourth acquisition in the past 20 months after purchasing Phoenix-based promotional marketing company, Bulbstorm. And now the good thing for everybody out there that's in this business is they have 40 open positions right now.
Ooh.
And boy, if I was going to join an up-and-coming company as a techie, I would take a real serious look at ePrize.
And they're based in the Detroit area, or Livonia, am I right?
Yeah,
or
north of Detroit.
North of Detroit.
Yep.
But Ferndale area, somewhere
around there.
That.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know, Mike, I think just about every company here that has any appreciable IT staff is short. I mean,
yeah, everywhere.
Everybody I talk to.
Side of the state. I mean, that was the reason Automation Alley was formed all them years ago, was to recruit. And the right place is sort of their counterpart in Grand Rapids. And they got a long list of tech openings that, you know, it's just we can't get the bodies in here.
Mm. Well, good news for people who are coming up with that kind of technology. Hey, speaking of openings, I hear there's a few for the Russian Cyber Defense Department.
Yeah, well, you know, I could tell you a little bit about that. I mean, cyber war is where it's at. Certainly, Richard Steenan and I covered that in our book, Cyber Stiletto. But I mean, it's like stuff that we wrote a couple of years ago is all turned into headlines. So I'm going to look back into my crystal ball and come out with a second book here pretty soon. But in this case,
I thought you'd turn your fictional book into just a documentary, just rename it. Because everything you kind of talked about in Cyber Stiletto is coming true now.
It's spooky, isn't it? I mean, I didn't realize we were so on. And we sent it off to U.S. Cyber Command, sent a personal copy to General Alexander, but never heard back from him, so I don't know what that means. So, but anyway, the Russians are doing exactly what everybody else is doing. The Chinese are really good at this. The U.S. has Cyber Command, and now the Russian Defense Ministry is doing the same thing. They're getting an element of the armed forces together that just focuses on responding to cyber attacks.
And that is kind of
them.
Putting a public face on something that I'm sure has existed for a long time. Hey, some other good news I understand in the Detroit area about a local startup that struck it rich.
Yeah, it's called Stick, and it's kind of like Angie's List, and it works with Facebook. And it's got a lot of this, you know, it's got all this hot-button social media stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they just closed a $2.3 million Series A financing round, led mostly by Michigan folks,
Excellent. The
North Coast Technology Ventures out of Ann Arbor. And as I mentioned, Josh Littner's company, Detroit Venture Partners, was involved in the first step. You know, Mahindra's company was involved, MEDC, Automation Alley. So, I mean, that's good when local money is going into local. Actually, it's not even a local company. They started in San Francisco and then moved to Detroit about 4 months ago. So that's pretty good.
We've
right?
had them on the air, I think, Gary, as guests, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Stick. Yeah. When they were first in the area. So it's neat to hear some people we had that were coming in have now generated a lot of interest locally. And looking at your headlines here, it looks like there's more tech startups in Michigan that are getting focused on this entrepreneurship program.
Yeah, the U of M has got a new program started where they're trying to really work real closely with the different startups that they have that they generate, and then working with other entrepreneurs around the state. It's an interesting concept. And you can learn more about it at MI Tech News.
Right.
So.
All these stories, by the way, we're following here with Mike. Let's wrap up with one more about a company that's been selected to help our Michigan State Court.
It's an electronic filing management system that True Filing EFM is called, and what it does is it provides a common platform for court paperwork. And anybody that's, you know, I used to be a
Lord.
Court reporter, and you know, you have to dig through reams of paper, and now it's no longer paper, it's digital, and this is an experiment where they did it here in Southeast Michigan, and now they're experimenting with the rest of the state to get all the courts talking the same language, and judges can even sign the paperwork electronically. It's got a lot of bells and whistles going.
Well, I tell you what, folks, if you'd like to follow up more on these stories that Mike has been talking about, mitechnews.com. If you go to internetadvisor.net, Mike, the link is right there. You can click on that and fill in the details on these stories and many more as Mike looks at what's going on in technology in the state of Michigan. Thanks so much for being with us, Mike.
Thanks, Foster.
Have yourself a very good week. Hey, before we wrap up the hour, and by the way, coming up this next hour, we're going to be opening up for your calls. Rick Broida, who is our gadget guy, is in studio here. And Rick, we were talking about the iWatch in our last segment. Maybe just kind of we talked about the Pebble, which has been out, kind of an attempt at that. How is the iWatch going to be different?
Well, keeping in mind that it's still just speculation at this point because Apple has obviously not announced. It's all rumor. But I can see where Apple would come up with something that is just really slick. I mean, you think about how they reinvented the phone. They, you know, reinvented the tablet. I think they have the potential here to create something, again, getting ahead of kind of everybody else, really kind of blow the doors off and make a watch that is just a real extension of your phone that alerts you when you have text messages, that alerts you when a call's coming in by vibrating so that, you know, you don't miss the call, which how often does that happen? Because the phone's in your pocket, it's
you
in your purse.
You can't dig it out. It's a weird time. You've got it under four layers.
Exactly. The kind of thing where it would have a headphone jack and you could just, you know, for runners, you know, you could just plug in directly to that. All sorts of potential.
So the other thing that is coming out is Google Glass.
Right.
And when you think about it, which one, you know, would you do? Would you have to even move your arm so you could see your watch? Or you're looking out through your glasses anyway. What if the message just popped up on a heads-up display on the glass? The competing technology, different parts of the
body. You know, that's the kind of thing I'm going to have to see to believe.
Heaven help the other drivers if I get distracted. God, I'm bad enough getting distracted, but if all of a sudden something blinks in my glasses, I would be very concerned about that.
Or if it says something in your ear, and then you'd have to
exactly.
Then you'd have to use your brain waves, which we're now learning how to read, to turn on
our
your
cars
glasses.
Will be driving themselves, however.
But that's a good point.
Now that, okay, yes, yes.
GM says 2018 they will have production cars.
I could see that happening.
Production
cars. But those glasses, one of the things that bothers me about it, I think all of us except you, Gary, wear glasses. For reading and things like that, maybe?
For driving.
Oh, for driving. Okay. Yep. But if something suddenly popped up in my field of vision, Eddie, it would make me, I'd be very afraid of, like, veering off the road because I'm looking at it. I mean, it's bad enough now that something goes up.
But you haven't even—that's just a fear without knowing, right? You ever used a heads-up display on your glasses?
On cars, I have. I've seen some on cars.
Yeah, and does that bother you?
Well, it's a little different because it was lower in the line of sight. This would cause me to look up from what I've seen in it.
You've not seen it,
you know. And plus, I have a hard enough time cleaning my regular glasses. I cannot find a pair of glasses that will not scratch. Just with eye boogers, you know what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy going on here. So now I have to clean Google glasses.
There's a whole new realm of cleaning products out there for Ed's.
Yeah,
that's gonna come, folks. We've just got the title for the show. Oh, you put the cap on it. Rick, thanks so much for being with us. You have something more to say. You want to hang around to the beginning of the next hour, at least? Or do you have to get off?
I can do that.
Okay. Oh, beginning good. Of next hour, he's got something else to talk about. But, folks, next hour is the time for your calls as well at 800-859-0WJR. 800-859-0957. If you give us a call right now, we'll get you lined up. And then Rick has some really neat things to talk about, something about the magazines that's coming out on Windows 8. We can talk about a little bit as we start the next hour as well. And Ed's got some great tech stories about resurrecting a couple of laptops. All that coming up this next hour here on the Internet Advisor. Again, the phone number is 800-859-0957. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. It's hour number two. You're listening to the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Rick Broida for a little bit are going to be here in studio to answer your questions at 800-859-0957. When we come back, and just quickly, Rick has got a great offer to let you know about. Of course, he's the official cheapskate at the CNET/cheapskate.com. Who else would have a good deal for us? We're warming up for the part of our show that we like the best in many ways, and that's when we get to talk with you folks out there about your computer problems and see if we can find some help for you. Our number is 1-800-859-0957. Rick Broyd is sticking around from our first hour of the program briefly because one of the things we'd like to do is to give you a chance to talk about some of the great deals that you've come up with. And you've got a humdinger there for people who like magazines.
Right. I know. It seems a little crazy to talk about magazines in this high-tech world, but I'm actually talking about digital magazines, right. The kind that you can read on your tablet or on your PC. So there's a service called Next Issue, which gives you kind of a Netflix for magazines. In other words, you pay one flat rate per month, mm-hmm. and you get access to their library, which is fairly large and growing. You get access to their entire library of magazines. You can read all the issues you want, all the different different actual magazines that you want. It's completely unlimited. And normally you can get a 30-day trial mm-hmm. to kind of test drive the service, but through my good buds over at CNET, they are actually doing an offer where you can get 3 months of a free trial of Next Issue, so a full 90 days. And this is actually, I know you linked to it on the site just now, but...
Yes, it's if you go to our homepage at internetadvisor.net, and you'll see at the under Rick's name, I say Rick is also the reigning cheapskate who always has incredible deals. Where if you click on that word cheapskate, it'll take you to your cheapskate blog, and right there the first item is that one.
Right, exactly. And so I'm really enamored of this service. I really like Next Issue. As an iPad owner, I really have kind of taken to reading magazines on the tablet. Mm. And I'm a big fan of Entertainment Weekly, for example, right. and I'm able to get that like first thing on Thursday as opposed to waiting it for it to show up in my mailbox who knows when.
And it's good for short form, that kind of where you've got a few pages of an article you're following rather than a whole book, for me at least.
Right, sure, but you do get the whole issue.
Yes,
just as
oh yes, no, you get the whole issue.
Right.
I mean, in terms of magazines, there's a little short form in terms of the content.
Sure, sure,
but
exactly.
It's a great deal. Okay, again, folks, if you go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and you click on that word cheapskate, it'll take you off to his Rick's blog. By the way, when you're there, take a look at the other great deals that are there, but this week, there's a great deal going on the part of the folks at CNET, where they host the Cheapskate blog. And Rick, thanks so much for being here.
And I got to say something about the Cheapskate blog, because there are 10 different things that Rick talks about in this issue, but there are 162 issues. So, don't just look at this one. Look at last week's and the week before, and there's a great, great amount of resource and linking off to some really neat deals.
Is there a time limit on this one, by the way?
That actually expires. I think it's late Sunday.
Okay, sign up for this one
through Monday
before you look at the other stuff.
But yeah, definitely, definitely get this weekend if you're interested.
So for you folks who are listening to us live, you have the edge. And for the rest of you who may be hearing us on the Michigan Talk Network a little later on, you'll still find plenty of great deals there. So please check that out. Again, that's Rick's Cheapskate site. Rick, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank
Always you. Always a delight to have you here. Folks, this is the time of the program where we answer questions about technology, and the people who are answering them here are people who have had their hands on technology. And Ed, this last week, you breathed life again into a couple of laptops, but you had some insights I thought might be really good to share just before we get to our callers.
Right. The first one is one of the computers actually had one of those rogue antivirus pieces of software, and it took it over so bad that after I was able to eliminate it manually, you couldn't execute any programs on there. Every time you did, it was pointing to the rogue antivirus. And I couldn't even run system restore, which is the first step that usually you do. What I ended up doing, and that ultimately fixed it, is you have to run on Windows 7 a system repair disk. One of the first things you do when you get a new laptop or desktop is create a Windows 7 system restore disk. And you have the same thing in Windows 8.
Yes.
Our system repair disk, I'm sorry.
Repair disk.
And that includes Microsoft Diagnostics disk and hard drive and system. But one of the things it does, it allows you to go back and do a system restore to a previous point.
Extremely important.
And when I was able to do that, it restored it to a point before the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was able to download Malwarebytes and scan it and remove the virus the rest of the way.
Because very often when people get into a trouble like this, they think, if I just take Malwarebytes or some of the other ones or whatever plan you're paying for, it'll take care of it. No, it doesn't.
No.
And you often, this thing has dug in so deep into the system that what you need to do is what, Ed, you're talking about doing, which is to get that system repair disk. It could be for Windows 7, it could be for Windows 8. But the key thing is, and you're saying, Ed, is that when you get that new computer, or if you've got one right now, mm-hmm. create the system repair disk.
Right. And then also, you also want to create the manufacturing restoration DVDs, and this is especially important over Christmas. And around Christmas time, I always mention this. But if you haven't done it, Windows 7 and Windows 8 allow you the ability to create a system image, which also gives you the ability to store it on DVDs or an external drive. It's an exact clone of your computer right now. Right. So if something happens down the road, you can at least recover up to
you
this point.
You can recover back with the programs you've been
installing. I was in at Best Buy, and I overheard them talking to somebody that they were selling a computer to, and they were saying, now, you know, if you don't know how to create this, we can have the Geek Squad do that for you while you shop the rest of the store, and they'll create the rescue disk.
Sweet.
It's $40, and you think, okay, but you're going to have to do this on a 32-gig thumb drive, USB drive, and that's going to cost you $39,
right,
or $36, whatever they are. Now, they're going down in price, but and I've seen them as low as, what, 16, I think we were seeing them. But
what do you suggest?
You can buy your own at 16,
yes.
And it's pretty easy to create a disk,
yes,
right?
Yes. So our recommendation to you folks is to get something you can store it on, which would be like a 32 gigabyte thumb drive or onto a DVD, burn it onto
several
a DVD.
DVDs,
but whatever you do, please burn off that system repair disk for Windows 7 or 8 and the system,
system image?
System image.
Right, which all
create a system image.
Create a system image.
Yeah. Create a system image.
And this is all can be found, control panel under backup.
Yep.
Very good.
Very easy
okay.
to do.
Back with our first caller, Sean from Ominous, in just a moment. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, and this is your time. 800-859-0957 is our phone number. And let's go to our first caller, who is Sean from Romulus. Hi, Sean. How you doing?
Hello. Doing all right.
How can we help you?
My C drive, which has got Windows on it, it's a partition drive, about 35 gig, is I keep getting a notice that it's running out of free space, and I discovered that the free space keeps shrinking.
The total size of your drive is 35 gigabytes?
No, just the partition.
Oh, just
this one partition.
So, how old is the computer?
Oh, 5 or 6 years old or something with Windows XP.
All right. With Windows XP. Eddie, any thoughts?
Sorry, Gary.
One of my folders that I was looking at, the documents and settings, there's about 5 folders in there, mostly users.
Yep.
And if you click on the whole thing says if you click on the properties for the whole folder, documents and settings, it says it's like 2.5 gig, but all the files in the folder inside the folder only add up to about 15 megabytes.
There's a lot of hidden folders in documents and settings. You said this was Windows XP.
Yes.
So it's documents and settings, and then you have usernames, and then under each of the usernames. Right. So there's a lot of hidden folders in there.
Is it possible, Ed, remember we've had people before, when you have partitions, that sometimes what happens is that there's a partition that's supposed to be for the restorer, and it's small. It's a relatively small.
Yeah.
And what happens is that stuff gets downloaded to that, and it fills up. When it shouldn't be downloaded to it. We've had people call in the past with
this. That's true.
Especially with XP.
That's true, but most people don't use that. And who's the manufacturer of your computer?
It was a homemade one.
Yeah, then I doubt that's the case.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to fill up. Have you used a utility like CCleaner in the past that actually goes out?
Not in a long while.
Okay. Well, if you want to find out where all the data is going, you can use a utility called WinDirStat. It's like almost like WonderStat or Wonder Statistics, but it's called Win, WinDirStat. It's a free utility. You can go to Google and then say WinDirStat, and I think CNET even provides it to download. And it's a small utility, about 1.5 megabyte, and it will tell you where all your data is. Like it'll show you your C drive, and it says your total C drive is this size, and then you hit you expand it down, and it sort of looks like a folder structure like you used to see in an Explorer. But then you can look at it real quick, and it'll show you that 15 gigabyte in documents and settings, and then you expand it a little further, and it says, oh, it's in this folder, and you expand. Pretty soon you'll be able to drill down and find out where is all your data.
You had a case this last week of a computer you worked on.
And that this is the utility I used to
discover. Exactly, because what had happened, by the way, in this, Sean, was that there was a hidden file that was loaded with all sorts of games. How many gigabytes did it have in it?
It had 24 gigabyte
That's right.
of temporary internet files that were used for Internet Explorer and Firefox also had the same plugin in it, right. And it was used to store temporary internet files for, as an example, all FLV files, which were YouTube videos, and gaming files, which are all JavaScript. So anything that my sister-in-law ever played or watched on YouTube right. for the last year was stored on there, and 411,000 files.
So, Sean, what we're suggesting you do is this, and we're not going to have enough time to go through it step by step, but we suggest that you download that little utility called WinDirStat, WinDirStat, and then run that and at least find out where this stuff is that's packing in there, okay?
Okay. Yeah.
And then, if it's in a folder that has something like temporary internet files or, you know, or just temp, you're usually pretty safe to delete those files.
Right.
And then, of course, check your recycle bin. I'd also run a check disk on your computer.
Okay.
Or in Windows XP, you can tell it to check my C drive for errors, and it'll reboot your computer. And you do that by going into your My Computer, going to your C drive, right-mouse-clicking on your C drive, and select Properties. I want to look at the properties of my C drive. It'll bring up a toolbar, and you select, or a dialog box, and you select the Tools tab,
right.
And then it'll say, check my disk drive for errors. And you say, yes, I wish to check my drive for errors. And it'll say, but you need to reboot your computer to check your disk drive for errors.
And also, I think, gives you the option to repair, doesn't it?
Repair. And would you like? And then when you restart your computer, you'll see that it'll start scanning your computer for
errors. So then just walk away from it. Don't sit near there, Sean. You'll be going bleary-eyed. Just walk away from it. Find something else to do. Get a good book. And then probably in a couple hours, you can come back, and it'll have us, you know, look through it. It'll have found the bad sectors, if there are any bad sectors, and there's a chance with a machine that old that you might have it in there, okay?
So thank you.
If you could, take a look at that, and then when you found it out, by the way, get hold of us through our Contact Us button. Our forums, by the way, right now, we're having some problems with, but if you use the Contact Us button, which is on our homepage at internetadvisor.net, you can get hold of us directly, and then at that point, we'll get back with you and try to help you some more that way.
And it's probably not worth putting a whole lot of effort into this old of a computer, right. And the new computers, you would never do what they used to do, which was partition, that they just leave it wide open and you wouldn't have.
There's even a possibility if you're going out and finding either a used or a new you drive for it,
right.
That'll cost you maybe $50, but it'll give you an enormous amount of capacity, like 500 gigabytes of capacity.
Just download it, reinstall the
software on there, and you're good to go. Okay, let's get back out to Jim in Westland. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, a lot of my friends, the majority of them, are having bugs and problems with Windows 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if this is fed back to Microsoft, where they're going to either revise it and come up with a Windows 9, because a lot of people do not want to put it on their computer because of this problem, even if it comes with a new computer.
Just a quick question for you. Did you get Windows 8 with a new computer?
No, I did not, because one of the things that turned me off besides that is a lot of the new computers don't have the high resolution that you have in an Apple computer, and once you see the high resolution, you don't want to step down have it.
Yeah, there are some other ones out there that have good high resolution on them, but I'm understanding it.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to buy a $450 laptop with that great of resolution. You're going to have to spend
Sony
the $750, the $900.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to spend a good deal of money to get. But Apple computers, I have a laptop.
Yeah,
good. $1,200 for my 13-inch MacBook Pro, you know, so it does cost a good bit. Jim, I would say this. First of all, just in terms of news and for you and for other people out there, Windows 8, there's an update coming. And all I'm seeing right now is that there's an update coming very soon to Windows 8 and to Windows Phone 8 and a lot of other stuff, okay?
Right.
In addition to which, they're also working on, like, Windows 9. But what's going to be happening...
Well, it's called Blue.
What's called... Blue is that, yeah.
At least that's a working title right
that's
now.
That's a title that they have. But anyway... They realize there are a lot of problems in that system. It's a risky problem.
Or just acclimation.
Typical. Some of it is just lousy software that they've admitted is lousy. Some of the apps, for instance, that are on Metro have to be fixed. They're horrible.
Okay.
And then they've admitted to that. In other words, that they're doing that update to those basic apps.
Yes, yes.
But there are some things that use the word bug. It's true. Listen, are you on a Mac platform?
I have both the Mac and a PC.
Okay. What are you using, Mountain Lion?
Yes, I am.
Okay. When Lion first came out, which is the version just before that, and Mountain Lion, with Lion, there were bugs. My Lord, it was worse than Northern Michigan in the spring. It was just everywhere, like black flies. Yep. And they did a lot of backpedaling. Look at Apple's maps that came out on the iPhone 5. You know, new software, especially if it's taking a chance and moving out in some new areas, is always going to have bugs. Now, I'm not making excuses for what's going on with Windows 8, except to tell you, and other people who are considering to use it, they are coming out with updates. Microsoft is coming out with updates sooner than later. They're also working on an entire Windows 9, and we're not really sure what that will be. The code name for it is Blue, and that refers to a lot of other updates that are going on.
Okay, real quick, the Roku system that you mentioned,
yes.
I only paid $80 in December for my new Blu-ray player, and it does some of the same things as Roku, where I can go on and run Pandora and everything else, and it only cost me $80, plus I got the privilege to play Blu-ray disc.
There that you go. Is, you're nice. Right. Good for
that's
you.
That's great.
That's
good,
good price for that.
Good price, Jim. Hey, thanks so much for telling us that. And for the rest of you, we've got phone lines open for you, too, at 800-859-0957. Now, you know what Jim just did? He gave us a tip. We're happy to get tips from you as well, because there are a lot of people who listen who, when they hear your tip, think, oh, good, and it helps them solve a problem. So, 800-859-0957 with questions or answers. And again, I'd like to recognize the folks who make this program work, our able engineers and producers behind the glass, and that is Rich Wozinski, who's spinning the dials for us tonight, and also Scott Iometta, who is helping with answering the phone calls. Keep giving him new names every week. All right, let's get back out to our phones and talk with Gail from Farmington Hills. Gail, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and how can we help you?
Well, first of all, I want to give a tip to all your listeners, since you were talking about tips.
Yes.
Yes, please.
No matter how dumb you may feel, if you have a question, call the Internet Advisor.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Wonderful tip.
Well, I've been listening for a long time, and I just absolutely love your show.
Oh, thank you.
I really do. And I've got just a small problem.
Yes.
Okay.
My clock on my computer consistently loses 3 hours. And then I click the little clock on the bottom right. You can tell I'm not a real techie person
that's
okay. here.
That's where it is.
That's where it is. Yeah.
And I reset the clock, and be doggone if 2 days later it's lost 3 hours, and it's showing up on my emails. The wrong time is being reflected in my emails.
Eddie, this is symptomatic of something, isn't it?
Well, so it's exactly 3 hours, so it's almost like it switches to Pacific time.
Yeah, it's I didn't know that, but that's logical, yeah.
No, but I mean, that was more
of
a question.
It's always exactly three hours.
That's the key, so why don't you tell her how to...
Actually, Ed, you could tell me, because Justin had this problem on his new computer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And when he first got it, he set it for Eastern Time, and it slipped to Central Time. And then he set it at Eastern Time, and slipped to Central Time. And he said, Dad, this is what happens. And I said, try it one more time. He tried it one more time, and it's never done that again.
Okay.
So he thinks it's because I was watching it.
But you are an Internet Advisor.
I could come
over. You're welcome.
Gail, I could come over.
Watch my computer.
but I don't know how we fixed it, Ed. Do you know how?
The only thing that I could think of is somehow either it has the wrong time zone selected. So you go to the time on the bottom right of the taskbar, and you double click on it, and then you can change your you could change your time and change your time zone.
Right.
So confirm that you're in Eastern. But then you also have a third tab on there that basically says Internet time. Your computer is set to use Internet time, and it might be like, I think it's time.microsoft.com or...
it's a government times thing, isn't it?
Not this one. This is a Microsoft time thing. So time.microsoft. So turn off Internet time, you know, and that should fix it.
Turn it off?
Yes. Yeah. Because in the day and age of Internet, you don't know where you are actually truly hitting the Internet. You could be hitting the Internet in Warren, or you could be hitting the Internet in the Pacific Coast.
Yeah.
And so it's basically basing your time zone on where your traffic truly hits the Internet. And based on the IP address that you're given.
Good idea.
So I think that's what was going on, that the gateway that he normally goes through somehow got bumped to a different router.
That's interesting.
That's the only thing I could think
of. So it's called Internet Time, and this happens, you get this on Vista and Windows 7 and Windows 8.
Yep, it's Windows 7.
Yep.
So just turn it off.
Just make sure it's unchecked. Yes. Now, the other thing,
But then if you travel, so when I travel and I turn my computer back on, you know, after I get off the airplane, it'll take a little bit, but then it turns to whatever time zone I happen to be in.
Which
so
is
it's really nice.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, it's really nice. So turn it back on when you travel.
Because it locates it, I think, to the IP then, doesn't it?
Right.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Now,
quickly,
guys, is it true that this could also, however, be a symptom? How old a machine is this?
About 2 years old.
Okay. Because I thought I had heard that when your clock loses time, it can also be an indication that the CMOS battery is going.
And that's a possibility.
There's a little battery different on the board, you know, and while I wouldn't...
Yeah, but consistently 3 hours...
Yeah, that's different.
Right, that's what's
different. But for other people who have experienced this kind of... It's always off, but not by an even amount of time
It starts getting more and more off all the time.
So for those people, we say turn on the internet clock and it'll reset
every time
they come up.
There is something called a CMOS battery. Now, I don't know if that's still in the new motherboards or not, but it looks like the size of a nickel.
Yeah.
And it's round.
I imagine it is.
If you look down on the board when you open up your well, it wouldn't be in your laptop. I wonder what it happens in the laptop. Is it a laptop, by the way, or a desktop?
In the laptop.
No, it's a desktop.
Yeah, see, in the desktop,
on the desktop, it's still
you
on the motherboard. And on laptops, you would be where the battery is. Some manufacturers, actually, when you remove the battery off the bottom of the laptop, there might be a panel, or you could actually see
that's
the
a rare instance. I'm tending to think, Gail, it's much more what the guys have identified, okay?
Well, thank you very much.
Very well. By the way, you have mentioned something that it's important to say to our listeners, to us now who are listening to us live on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit. Don't forget to spring forward. Set your clocks ahead tonight by 1 hour, or you will show up
late
for wherever you're going tomorrow on Sunday, okay?
I'm sitting in my car trying to figure out how to change the clock in my car.
Good for you. You're ahead. Planning.
Gail, that is the worst clock. I was talking to somebody in the store recently and was saying, what's the worst clock? And they said, the car. Because there's always some little twist.
I know it's got RDS and RDM. I'll figure it out when I open the book.
But it's the only that you heard it. You hit it. It's the only time you will find a man looking in the manual.
Yeah, you betcha. And how many times have I shown up to work on Monday and they go, "You mean you went through all of Sunday without realizing the time zone? The daylight savings?" And I'm like, "Hey, you know,
the one with the car is the hardest one." Well, Gail, thank you so much, dear. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Gail.
All right, the number again: 800-859-0WJR or 800-859-0957. As you heard Gail saying, you know, please don't feel, you know, awkward about asking a question, because we've often said this, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask, because it helps so many other people.
And sometimes when you don't know quite how to ask the question, try and we'll help you ask it.
We'll help you. I'll fill that out. And an old friend of ours, Ben from Adrian, is with us. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing fine, Foster. How about you?
I'm doing very well, better than I deserve, as they say. I see you've got some. Have you got some tips for us on the Windows 8 systems?
No, I haven't got onto Windows 8 yet.
Oh, okay. I knew you had a new machine. Some new machines.
Yeah, I got a new machine, and that's what brought up a comment about the guy that was having trouble with the C drive getting full.
Oh, okay. Go ahead,
please.
Yeah.
He said he had it partitioned. Well, it's very possible that his data is not getting sent to the other partition, which is making his C drive fill up fast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's being sent to the wrong partition, right?
Yeah.
Now, how
do it depends how it's configured. As Ben said, you can configure the Windows that you're on to say, you know what, store all my default documents and settings and user settings and store them on this other partition. You know, every user.
Where do you
different.
Go to set that? Where do you go to set that, guys?
You ask Ben.
All right, Ben, where do you go?
I'm not sure yet. I'm still fumbling through Windows 7.
Yeah, I think you do it from your desktop. If you have your My Documents folder on your desktop in Windows XP, because the gentleman had Windows XP, you right mouse click on it and you select properties, and then it actually gives you the properties. Path, if you will.
Wouldn't you also
you can just change that? And you can
my
browse.
Computer? The control panel, and then go to my computer?
Or just off the desktop.
Or just off the desktop, right-click on my computer. And isn't it under properties as well?
Yep, and under properties in there. And then you could say, you know, it'll...
You identify the drive, right?
Right, it'll say, that by default, Documents and Settings is stored on the C:\ Documents and Settings. You just browse and say, no, I want it to be located here, and you select D, E, F, however.
All right, so when you open up the dialog that has the different drives in it, let's say you have one drive and it's been partitioned, it'll show you that single drive. Let's say it's 200 gigabytes, and it'll show you the two partitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can usually choose from there what goes where. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. But sometimes you'll have to make this choice in the individual programs.
Oh, I
see.
When
you install the programs, it'll say, this is where we'll put your user content by default, or do you want to change? And a lot of times you're going through it fairly quickly, and you say, yeah, just put it in the default, and the default happens to be, maybe, in this case, his C drive.
It's very
so
hard.
You have to go back and figure out which content's coming from which program, and if it's going into the C drive, then he'll change it at the content, at the program level.
Since we have Ben on with us, Ben, I wanted to say thank you for all the help you've given folks in the forum, and that leads me to tell folks.
Great help.
Right now, we're having some problems with that, some technical problems with it. And
well, we upgraded to a forum thinking this was going to be better for everybody, but the way that we keep spam out of the forums, they don't have a connection to this new forum program yet.
So all of a sudden,
so now we've got to go back, or we've got to find something else.
We were getting advertising for solutions to physical problems that nobody really has.
And nobody wants
only
to know
in their
about.
Mind or even wants to know about. But, Ben, I wanted to thank you for being in there and helping with that. Did you have any other comments or questions?
Yeah. On my new computer, I got a solid-state C drive.
Oh, yeah.
Which is small. And I have to put all my data on a D drive to save the space on the C drive.
Now, do you have a hybrid?
Yeah, that's what he just
said. No, it's not a hybrid.
Oh, it's not a hybrid.
No, he's got
I got a solid-state C drive, and then I got a D drive that's 1 terabyte.
Okay.
So I asked that question because they're putting them out nowadays where literally they marry them together. You physically get a little, it's a little SSD, the solid state drive that is on top of or in the same case as the hard drive.
No, so, this is not.
That's not, okay, yeah. But the advantage, now how big is your solid state drive?
256, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah, and they don't get much larger than that.
No, that's it. But it works great for storing stuff that you want to quickly access. And then, on the other hand, the terabyte is where you can put all the other data that you want to store.
Yeah, and boy, does it scream.
I imagine it does.
It's fast. He means fast.
Ben, we got to take off here, but thank you so much for being with us and being the big help that you are. Well, it's been a delight to be with you here, and I hope that you've enjoyed the program as well. We do have some time for a few more calls, so if you got a question you want to sneak in, 800-859-0957.
And next Tuesday is Microsoft Patch Tuesday, right?
Yep.
So that would be the, March 12th? So Microsoft has a number of patches they're going to be
big
releasing.
One. And we have a news item, by the way, on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Scroll down to the news items there. But yes, you're right.
And it also impacts Mac users. So if you're running Outlook or Word for the Mac, you're going to receive these patches as well.
Very good. Thank you very much. I do. I run Outlook Office for the Mac 2011. So I look forward to some of that stuff as well.
And, we put Office 365, which is the subscription version of Office, on Lauren's Mac.
Because
you get five of them.
How's it working?
And she loves it. She didn't. She was really unsure. She was the last of us because the rest of us have Windows-based machines. She has the Mac, and she was really
concerned
about it.
So you bought the single subscription
for
five installations.
And that's $9.95 a month.
I actually $99
a year, right?
$99 a
year. So you get a little less that way. But not you.
$99 a year.
Yeah. Something like
bottles
that.
Bottles of beer.
But, anyway. But it works well on the Mac.
So how many subscriptions do you have?
I still have one left. Anybody folks, needs me to adopt them.
This exactly. With my family, with big families, my extended family, my daughters have like 4 or 5 kids and 4 or 5 machines
it's
now.
It's a great
This, I
for
think,
them.
Is the great deal. Look on it to it, folks. It's the Office 365 Home Premium. Great, great deal. Let's jump back out. Craig from Shelby, Ohio. How you doing? Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hey, guys. Great to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Glad.
I just got a gateway with Windows 7, and it's got Word Starter on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when I go to open up the Word Starter, I can't open up any files, and it says see control panel to resolve this issue. And I'm like, what on control panel would show me this?
Now, you said Word Starter. That came with your computer?
Yes.
You know,
and so you might have just run out of subscription.
Yeah.
Do you know if I, so I'm not familiar with it.
No.
But is this for some period of time they want you to get kind of hooked and then go out and buy it?
Word Starter 2010. I had Office Student and Teacher 03 on my Sony Vaio tower.
Yeah.
And it worked fine.
Well, here's what is it possible to go into Control Panel under Programs and Features and then select it and then have the ability to repair it? So find Microsoft Word or Word Starter, and a lot of times it'll give you the ability to change / remove.
Now, you're using Windows 7, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so in Control Panel, you'll say that, yeah.
Yeah, so when you click on it and you identify it, either it'll give you the option to just uninstall.
Right.
Okay. Which is, that's bad, so I say no. Mm-hmm. Or it gives you the ability to say, would you like to attempt to repair or add another option to this? And you can select the ability to repair this application.
Sometimes, and it is not trial. I just looked it up, and it's not a trial version, so it doesn't expire. You can continue to use it, but it's limited functionality.
Now, you would be a perfect candidate, I think, Craig, and I don't get a commission. Somebody could accuse me.
I know.
I don't get a commission for this. But
for 3 years now.
Now, I would suggest that what Gary has done with going and buying the subscription, do you have a number of computers?
No,
you only have one computer. I still think it's worth it to do the subscription. And people will tell me, no, you're a fool. After 3 years, we'll have spent $300. But, you know,
I think
it's the way to go because what happens is once you buy the subscription to Office 2013, or it's called Office, Gary, help me, and yours, Office.
Oh, it's 2013.
Office 2013.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Go to Microsoft.com. You buy the subscription to that. You get to download everything. Word, Excel, Publisher, all those things. And then you also get four more installs.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. That's Office 365. There's Office 2013, but you get it on one machine only.
Well, if you buy the... Yes.
So
let's Office not confuse
365.
It. Office 365. Sorry. But anyway, go to Microsoft and look at their plans. I think once you've downloaded that and you get everything there, plus SkyDrive and everything else where you can store stuff in the cloud.
Although SkyDrive is free to anybody.
Yeah.
What's Microsoft's internet-based that I emailed
the
you
web
last
apps.
Week? Yeah, so you can also use Microsoft Web Apps, which is free versions of web-based Microsoft Word,
and that may be enough
Excel,
for you.
And PowerPoint. And that might get you by until you can get this problem fixed.
Right.
So it's called Microsoft Web Apps.
When you say subscription, is it like...
They charge you like $9.95 a month.
Okay. Is there like an upfront fee, or it's just $9.95?
Say again?
They charge you like an upfront fee, or it's just flat $9.95?
They give you give them the credit card, and every month you'll see a deduction for $9.95 or whatever it is.
Or you can buy it for $99.99 a year, which is a better deal if you're going to have it for a year, and which is what I did.
But again, you get the whole shoot and match, every application they've got, in addition to which you get to download it on four more machines. Ed?
And it is called Office Web Apps at Microsoft.
Yep.
So the best part about having Office 365 is my Outlook mail is completely backed up always, forever.
That's right.
In real time. So if I lose my machine tomorrow, you know, in the middle of, just after I send something, that's backed up. When I get a new machine, it'll download right back to where it was.
That's the sweet,
so easy
one
to
of
move
the many
from one
sweet
machine
things about
to
that.
The other. It's just...
Craig, look into that, okay?
Yeah.
I think the weather up here is not bad right now, by the way. It's looking like the crocuses may get clobbered.
It's going to snow again.
They're going to stick their heads up. This is March, and we know that it's got lots of surprises, even April as well. Greg, take care of yourself, and thanks so much for giving us a call. Let's go to Ray, also calling us from the great state of Ohio. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question I have. It's an older computer. I'm running XP. And Office 2003, I was having some problems with my Outlook. I ended up deleting my Office program to try and fix that problem, reinstalled the Office, and I was still having problems with Outlook, tried to uninstall it again, and I ended up with some kind of a Windows installer problem.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of... program or anything that fixes the Windows installer, updates it, or whatever? Is there any
Actually, yes, there is. There's a Microsoft utility, and it comes. It's a Microsoft Fix-It. If you just Google Windows, Microsoft Windows Installer Fix, okay. And it'll actually go ahead, scan your computer, and fix it. And then it, I believe, it also gives you a dialog box about identifying programs. This is, can also be used to uninstall programs that you're having difficulty uninstalling. So,
really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's Microsoft Fix-It.
Just go to Google, or go to Bing, actually, probably better than Google, but Microsoft Windows Installer Fix, just the way you described it. And Microsoft does make one for each of its operating systems.
Really?
Yes, you download it. It's about 70 megabyte.
Well, and it may come as a Mr. Fix-It, isn't it?
And it may come as a Mr. Fix-It.
Which means that it'll download an application to your computer that will literally go in there, and it's like a mechanic goes in and cleans out everything under the hood.
I used it twice last week, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does it just scan and then comes back and ask you for money?
No, not at all. That's
not
the beauty about going to Microsoft. Don't go elsewhere, and be careful. There are some out there that say, Microsoft approved, and I got caught a couple times last week with going to sites that weren't Microsoft, but... you know, try to spoof you into going to them, and then they end up wanting to have you spend money.
Yeah, and usually you end up at a site like called support.microsoft.com.
Yep.
Okay.
But it's at Microsoft.com.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome, and thank you for giving us a call. Well, I tell you what we're going to do. We have a few people who are back here on the lines holding. We'll try to get to you before we leave the studios here. But for the rest of you out there, thank you so much for being part of the Internet Advisor. Don't forget that on Sunday nights, we post the podcast, and sometimes I get a little energetic. We get it out a little bit before that. You can also subscribe through iTunes or use your favorite podcast downloader to get us. Again, that's the Internet Advisor. And on our homepage, we have links to all the people we've been talking about, and many of the tips we've been talking about are online at InternetAdvisor.net. Thanks once again. By the way, if you have a question during the week, go to the Contact Us button, which is on our homepage. Click that, and it takes you right off to us. Scott Iometta, Rich Lozinski, and all the rest of you guys who helped put this program together, Gary and Ed, have a great week. We will see you the next time with the Internet Advisor. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.